Our series, Meet Your Mind, A User's Guide to the Science of Consciousness, is supported by Promega Corporation, providing tools and technologies for research in life science, and the Knorr Foundation, exploring meaning and commonality of human experience.
Do you wish you could write or draw, but think you can't? Then you need to meet our friend Linda Barry. For 30 years, Linda wrote one of the country's best-known alternative comic strips, along with 17 books and an off-Broadway play. She's also the creator of a popular writing workshop called Writing the Unthinkable. It's a class designed for non-writers. In Linda's words, bartenders, janitors, office workers, hairdressers, musicians, and anyone who has given up on being a writer but still wonders what it might be like to write. She tells Anne Strangechamps how it works.
What happens is, this is the structure of my class, and I've taught it to grad students to medium security prison in Philadelphia, and it works. The only difference is the prisoners' stories always have cops in them. Actually, what got those guys in prison makes them good writers, which is they don't have a lot of second thoughts about, you know, I think this is a good sentence. They really tore it up, actually. They were quite good writers. But what happens is I'll say, okay, number of page from 1 to 10, and I want you to think back to early days in your life. And I say, okay, now, if you were going to tell the story of your life just using the word kitchen tables, just write down the first 10 kitchen tables or memories that come to you. And I give people a short amount of time. You have 2 minutes.
So you and have, all they're doing is listing kitchen
tables. They're listing
tables.
Kitchen tables, yeah. Then I have them go down the list and pick one that seems vivid. Let's go with my Aunt Carol's dinette set. And then I start to ask questions like, where are you, Aunt Carol's kitchen? What time of day or night is it? People are surprised they know. And then I'll say, well, what season is it? And then at this question, a simple question, where's the light coming from right now? And you'll find that the back of your mind has answers to these questions. And it makes you excited because you haven't thought of this stuff in a really long time. And then I have them write for 7.5 minutes, beginning with the words, I am, and writing as if it's happening right now. I am sitting on the ripped Naugahyde chair of my Aunt Carol's dinette set, putting my finger in there. Remember how they'd tear? You put your finger in there and then she'd scream at you.
So full disclosure, I've taken a couple of your workshops, and it's astonishing the way it works. And I think everybody in the room usually has the same feeling of astonishment, like, whoa, where did this come from?
I didn't know
I even remembered that table or that year or that car or whatever.
And that there's often an emotion. The interesting thing about these stories is they'll be little short stories. I mean, they don't even fill a page necessarily if typed up, and they'll have something in them.
You brought in a couple of stories that people have written in your workshops. Can you read one just to give us an example of what sort of thing comes out?
Yeah. Here is a story that was written, and the word that I gave was, I think it was Thanksgiving dinner. So this is a story by Carol Wickersham, and it was written in 7.5 minutes in the workshop, and this is the first draft. I'm sitting at the grown-up table for the first time. Kids at the card table are already eating the rolls. We're waiting for the prayer. We never pray. Our heads are bowed, but we're looking around. Aunt Isel's wig is drooping over her eyes. Next to her, the famous pink jello mold salad with olives that you can wear on your thumbs if you're at the kids' table. We're waiting for Dad to pray. He never prays. What's he going to say? TV, football, first down, 10 yards to go. Now a word from our sponsor. What will I reach for first? And then he reaches over with beery breath. Slap, get your damn hair out of your plate. My braids are yanked back. Tears fall onto my empty plate. I'm wishing I was at the kids' table. My mom squeezes my knee under the table and whispers fiercely, Bill, pray, damn it, so we can eat. He belches and starts. Dear God, in the year ahead and the year behind, may we all perish. Perish. Amen. I reach for the rolls, but Aunt Isel beats me, and she plops some of her pink foamy jello on my plate.
I love it.
Oh, pray, damn it, so we can eat.
The thing I love about that is that's 7 minutes. It's such a complete story.
Yeah, it is. It is. And they kind of have this quality. They're very different kinds of stories than one that's been labored over, where you know that every sentence is moving toward this one thing. It's a different kind of writing, but it's vivid to me and really satisfying. And My friend Kelly Hogan, the great singer, describes the class as, she goes, well, the way I explain it is that you blow your mind with your own mind.
So there's all this neuroscience now about brain function and creativity. You started by saying you call this process writing the unthinkable, which suggests it's writing with a different part of the brain, maybe. Do you think that?
Absolutely, I do. I've been really interested in the work of this brilliant guy named Ian McGilchrist, who's written a book that I actually cried the whole way reading, not from emotion, but because the type was really small and it was really dense. Absolutely worth every minute. The Master and His Emissary, The Divided Brain, and the Making of the Western World. But one of the things that he's done is he's written brilliantly about how we kind of have two brains. The left side of the brain, which is the part I'm using right now to speak and use language, likes the parts of things. It likes technology. It likes logic. It likes purpose. It likes utility. It's the parent in you that when you say, I want to be an artist, says, well, then I'm not paying for school. Yeah, hell no. It's that side. No, you're going to do something that you can make a living. So it's all about function and utility. And it's quite an important part of the brain. The other side is where we respond to music, poetry, metaphor, things as a whole, our experience of actual depth and distance. And so the studies that McGilchrist talks about, there are theories that in a weird way, part of the function of the brain is to shut the other side up. You know what I mean? It'd be like Well, either side can shut up. You know, I mean, you can't just have the left brain doing everything or the right brain doing everything. And here's an example of that's from the book. One of the ways to solve really intractable epilepsy, it's a drastic way, but it's to sever the bridge between the two sides of the brain. It's called the corpus callosum. When they sever it, it turns out that even if the sides of the brain can't talk, we still can roll on. Hmm. We can roll on pretty much fine, pretty much normally. But there's this period for some people where when that brain is divided, when that little bridge, which is the bridge that has the stoplight on it, when that's gone, then both sides are in play. And they talk about these people who have the most peculiar experiences. In the book, one of the things he talks about is this woman who would want to get dressed in the morning to go to work. So her right hand would reach for the outfit she should wear to work. And the left hand had a whole different idea and would grab an entirely different dress. And she could not get the left hand to put that dress down. And she talks about having to call her daughter in. This war, I mean, it's visible. It's visible here. It's because that stop sign wasn't there between the two sides of the brain.
So are you saying that you think that the writing process you've come up with is, this is the right brain doing the writing?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is my little theory, and maybe it could be full of baloney. But the thing I know about the left side of the brain is the left side of the brain also grasps, it's our precision grip, you know, the way we hold a pen. And I believe that writing by hand makes it so the left side of the brain's kind of satisfied. I'm doing something. I'm holding this pen. And so that because it's sort of engaged, I always feel like the right side of the brain can come forward. And that's why I think we doodle in a funny way. I think we doodle to shut the left side of the brain up, like during a meeting. Where that's really, really boring. I think it's sort of like handing a kid a crayon. It's like, you know, I know you want to talk through all this, but just draw. And so I've found that it's much easier to listen and concentrate if I'm actually drawing like a little doodle. Usually I do a spiral. And with my students, when they're listening to stories being told, I always have them drawing. The ability to remember stuff if you're doing something with your hand. And I always talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, our Supreme Court Justice, who has knit her way through her entire... Can you imagine sitting across from Scalia and all those guys and they're arguing some crazy stuff and she's like, click, 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 click.
And I just keep seeing Madame Dufarge knitting in the foot of the guillotine. So is this why you... One of the reasons you think this process is so pleasurable for people because... And so much of our life is governed and, you know, controlled by the left side of the brain, and the right side really wants to come out and play, and we don't let it do that all that often, or there aren't all that many opportunities for it to do so.
Yeah, or there's only one. You're only supposed to do it this one way. I think we understand all the arts, all that stuff with that side of the brain. With the right side, well, again, I'd say the back of the mind, top of the mind, that's what I use because the right side, left side is just, it just gives you too black and white of a picture. But I think one of the reasons why this is so pleasurable, it's not just because the experience of writing and remembering is pleasurable. That's true. But it carries out into the world. When you finish doing it, the world looks more alive.
Why is that?
Because we've kind of come alive. The back of the mind has an entirely different relationship, actually, to visual stuff, to depth, and to seeing things as a whole versus seeing things in little parts. And I think that that's part of the function, is that that's a more alive, less worried way to be. I mean, I think we need both sides, but I think what this work does, along with the side effect is you get some good stories, is it does make you feel more whole and more alive. And that's what I think the function of the arts is.
Linda Berry, talking with Anne Strainchamps about her popular writing workshop, Writing the Unthinkable. For 30 years, Linda wrote the alternative comic strip Ernie Pook's Comique. You can read more about her writing technique in her book, What It Is. And the scientist you talked about? You'll find our interview with Ian McGilchrist on our website, along with dozens of other interviews about the mind and the brain, and our comic book on consciousness. It's all at ttbook.org/meetyourmind. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Jim Fleming. This hour, The Creative Brain, is part of our special series, Meet Your Mind, A User's Guide to the Science of Consciousness, brought to you by Wisconsin Public Radio. Our series was produced by Steve Paulson, with the help of Anne Strainchamps, Sarah Nix, Doug Gordon, Veronica Rickert, and Charles Monroe Kane. Our technical director is Kirill Owen. Steve Mullen at Walk West Productions wrote the theme music. Special thanks to two of our sponsors for Meet Your Mind. Promega Corporation, providing tools and technologies for research in life science, and the Neuer Foundation, exploring meaning and commonality of human experience.
PRI, Public Radio International.